If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Check it out now. No doubt now.
Thursday morning, October 24th, 2019, the Beating the Book podcast, Megapod. Week 8. Wow. Week 8 in the National Football League. Skill Alexander. 2019 style with our staples of the show these days on my right. The conciliary to Derek Stevens over at the Circus Sports conglomerate. Casino moguls that they are. He's also the vice president of operations by his formal title. It's Mike Palm. What's happening, Mike?
Good morning, Megapod faithful.
Mike, we're going to get a Circa update from you momentarily. And on my left, Todd Wishnev from not only the Showtime docuseries Action, but Wednesday appearances on A Numbers Game. Todd, more beloved by the day. Thanks for doing this, Todd. Appreciate it.
It's what I do. Belovedness.
What's your percentage now in Circa, in the Circa contest? What are you?
I'm now 21-13-1 for a robust 61.4%.
Or as Rufus would say, completely random. I don't know. Let's find out what Rufus says. Making his long-awaited return to the podcast after at least a few years away, we are happy to have him back. Ladies and gentlemen, he's half of the Bet the Process podcast duo, along with Jeff Ma. It's our old friend Rufus Peabody. What's happening, Rufus?
Gil, it's been a while.
How you doing, man? Where are you right now?
I'm doing great. I'm in Boston.
How do you like living in Boston? I went to school there for 4 years.
It's, you know, it's growing on me a little bit. There's a lot of Patriots fans.
So. We'll get used to that. Have you been through a winter yet?
I have.
Oh, yeah.
It's not fun.
I hope you brought a jacket. My freshman and senior years, it was minus 40 wind chill.
Well, luckily we have global warming now, so it's not quite as bad.
I believe the correct phrase is climate change.
Allegedly. Scientists are conflicted. You know how they say it. All right, let me stop. All right, so Rufus, how is your football season going? How is your podcast season going? Are you and Jeff having as much fun as you always did with it?
We always have fun. We're like, you know, he's like my older brother or something. It's funny. It's funny the feedback we get. Some people think it's, you know, some people like more of that. Some people like less of that. But we enjoy it. And the football season has been very good for college. It's been, you know, more like less good for NFL, right around break even.
Yeah, I think that's a common refrain that I hear from people, at least anecdotally. The NFL has been, I mean, weird as look, and even teasers, at least as we've shown on this show, have not gone as well as we have had them go in the past seasons. We'll find out how we do today. Before we do any of that, Mike Palm, Circus Sports Update, who's in the lead? How big is their lead? How far back is Todd?
Well, so overall for the contest, there's one entry at 27 points, Gil, out of a possible, where are we at, 735?
Yeah.
And then one entry at 26.5, four entries at 26, two at 25, I believe nine at 24.5, and another 11 at 24. How many do you have, Todd? How many points?
I have 21 and a half.
He's alive.
You're tied for 133rd. In fact, your name appears amongst the 57 people at 21.5 when you scroll through the results.
Look at you, Toddy. How about that?
T. Wishnev won. There you are.
T. Wishnev won.
Now, as far as the second quarter, which we wrap up this weekend.
Yes.
Worth another $143,750. We have two entries at 13. We have seven entries at 12.5 and another 16 at 12. So there's 25 entries within 1 point of the lead here as we come into the final week of quarter two.
And again, for those who don't know, the Circa Contest features as one of their sort of staples, quarterly contests for $147,000, as it turned out. You can try again in November. You can try again in December on this. The record in quarter one, that one was 17-3, and that was a solo winner, right?
Yeah, 17.5, I think. Maybe it was 17-3. But that's the surprising thing, was that it was a solo winner.
Yeah.
So it's odd. You know, we had one push in quarter one. Now we had another push last week in quarter two. So it'll be interesting, though. I find the long shot is if we'd have another solo winner.
Yeah, I would think that's the case. It's always interesting. You know, we were talking about this on the show the other day, how everything in sports betting is its own discipline, and pre-flop, you know, ATS, National Football League, is its own thing. With, I guess, its own, some might say, you know, it's not a skill. Some might say it's random. But, you know, James Salinas, who I always go back on, he won the Super Contest 1 year. He finished third the next year, finished 26th a couple years later. He's about the only guy in modern history that I can sort of say that about, where he's been able to be consistent over time. But even as we point out, that's still only, what, over 240-some picks, 255 picks over three seasons. So even that could be subject to randomness, even though he's told us his method and he watches a lot of game film, and so who knows. But that's the story. Anybody can catch lightning in a bottle in a four-week period, that's for sure. Certainly hasn't happened to me. Todd, we had a shot, but then we crapped out week two of this particular month. So we'll keep that monitored. Before we get into our best bets of the week, gentlemen, let us do Thursday Night Football real quick, because people want to hear about that first. If you don't have an opinion, no biggie. Minnesota Vikings, 16.5-point favorites against the Washington Redskins. Rufus's favorite team, along with mine, if we can even say that anymore. Rufus, are you still an Orioles fan, not a Nationals fan, right?
Yeah, I'm an Orioles fan.
Okay, so you feel nothing about this Nationals run in the World Series?
Not much. You know, I actually wanted them to win that wild card game when they were losing, just because I was like, all these Nationals fans have had a lot of heartbreak in the playoffs over the years, and so now that they're on the cusp of winning the World Series, I'm not sure how I feel, though.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how we feel about the Redskins at this point, either. The fandom has been beaten out of us, I would imagine.
Honestly, I'm rooting for defeat. I'm rooting for embarrassment. I'm rooting for anything that will result in systemic change in that organization.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. Vikings, 16.5-point favorites tonight. Some people will, by narrative, call it the Kirk Cousins revenge game. It's equally the Case Keenum revenge game, I would imagine, and Adrian Peterson making his return to Minnesota. But the Redskins aren't very good at football, and the Vikings seem to be quite good at it on both sides of the football. Kirk Cousins even doing his Redskins stats thing now in the box score. But 16.5 is a lot of points. Rufus, we start with you. Any thoughts tonight on the side or the total?
It is a lot of points, and unfortunately, I happen to like the Redskins here. I think the line's actually up to 17 in some places now. I make it 13. It's not the kind of game I like taking. I feel like I've been on these big underdogs way too much, and the NFL, you know, there's a lot of parity, but there's also a few teams that are really bad. But at the same time, I don't think the Redskins are 17 points worse with Case Keenum at quarterback, who I do think is the best quarterback to win right now on that Redskins roster. What does worry me is that Kirk Cousins does seem to play well, and this is just anecdotally, he seems to play well against the bad teams. Like, you know, the Vikings blow out the teams that they're supposed to beat. That happened against the Raiders earlier. They beat the Eagles at home pretty handily. And so I'm hoping the Redskins can keep it close while somehow still being embarrassing.
And you're not required to watch the Redskins on your bet in this football game. You just sort of look away and see if it works out in the end. You did make a bet on this, though. You did, actually.
I did.
Okay. Mike, any thoughts here tonight?
It's actually my third best bet on this game, Gil, is under 42 tonight. Bill Callahan, who, when he took over Nebraska, thought it prudent to take a program that had run the ball for 60 years and passed 70% of the time, now wants to run the ball 70% of the time now that he's taken over this Redskins. And I don't know if I necessarily blame him. Here's why I like this under. You have two quarterbacks that played for the other team. who knows Keenum better than Zimmer? He had him for a year and went to the NFC title game with him. Didn't think they were good enough with Keenum. So I think that Zimmer knows Keenum well. Hopefully the Redskins organization knows Kirk Cousins well in the same light. You should be prepared for both these quarterbacks. I agree with Rufus. I think it's too high of a number. I'm going to play this game in live bets as a parlay with the Redskins in the under, but for my best bet, third best bet this week, under 42.
All right, we can already mark that down for Mike. Third best bet, under 42. Thursday night football. I like the SMU game better, by the way, as a bet. I'll take SMU. I'll lay the 14. Todd, what do you think here?
I don't want any part of the game, but I would say that it's very possible that the Vikings get out to a huge lead, run the ball incessantly in the second half, and then Washington down 23 comes down and gets a backdoor to lose by 16. So I don't want any part of it in any way.
I don't want any part of it either, but that's a good point, you know, to Mike's under. The Vikings have had a couple games this year, most notably perhaps the first game of the season against the Falcons. Kirk Cousins dropped back a grand total of 11 times through 10 passes. I think there was a subsequent game, Todd and I were talking about this morning, we think it was the Oakland game, where they really were like, we're running and that's all we're doing. So they're capable of really taking the air out of the ball for sure. Rufus, I saw you leaning in on my SMU comment. You had something to say there.
Oh, yeah. I took Houston there. I know they have De'Eric King is out, but and I think he's worth a lot. But, I mean, I couldn't resist when I got 14.5 there.
I understand. Dana Holgorsen is so bad, though. Such a bad coach.
Did you watch the Houston-UConn game last week?
I didn't.
UConn should have won the football game outright.
Yeah, that's bad. But, I mean, did you watch Wisconsin-Illinois? Do we think Illinois is a better team than Wisconsin?
Yeah, so go fuck yourself, Todd.
It's a decent point. All I'll say is I can't stand Houston. I just can't stand him. But I hope you win.
Oh, great. Thanks. That's very nice of you, Todd. That means you hope you lose.
Rufus, if you follow Todd's work, you'll know he's a real slave to recency. Also, Gil, you can get 13.5 with SMU at Circa, right?
Actually, you know, I got it at Bookmaker. I got it at 13, so I'm only laying 13 there. Yeah, but thank you.
So, Gil, we have a nice middle between us.
That's right. That's right. We have a nice middle. 14 points. We're all winners. That's what we're rooting for.
Like SMU first half.
All right, SMU first half. A little college football. All right, so let's do the best bets. Mike, we already have your number three best bet, but Rufus, let's start with your best bet in the NFL Week 8, either side or total, sir.
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to go with the Bengals plus 13.5 points. This is, you know, I've been on the Bengals way too much, just like I've been on the Broncos way too much. You know, so far, they've been bad. Their offensive line play has just been absolutely horrendous. They grade is the second worst pass blocking in the league. And while I expect them to continue to be bad, I don't expect them to be quite as bad. But who are the Bengals? I mean, going into this season, we thought they were we knew them pretty well. A team with an average-ish quarterback in Andy Dalton, who wasn't going to win you games on his own, but with an adequate supporting cast, could. And the supporting cast hasn't really been there this year. I mean, obviously, they haven't had an offensive line, and they haven't had one in the last three seasons, but their skill position players have not, you know, been as good as in previous years. And Andy Dalton has not played as well as he had in the past. But the thing is, he's an NFL quarterback. I mean, he's not, I'm trying to come up with an example of he's not Keith Null or any, you know.
He's not Hodges.
He's not
Hodges.
Ryan Lindley, yeah.
But so I just think, you know, obviously the Dolphins are this sort of historically bad team that with really much, really very little talent across the board. And I don't think the Bengals are that team, though. If you look at the Rams are pretty, you know, they're okay at offensive tackle, but their offensive line, the interior of their offensive line is just as bad, is actually worse than the Bengals and worse than any other team with the exception of the Dolphins. So also, if you look so far this season, the Bengals, they've been outscored by 11.8 points per game, but based on my game grades, they've played to an expectation of only minus 7.5 points a game. So that translates to over 20 points that they've been kind of unlucky. And so honestly, this game is largely based on the fact that I don't think that Cincinnati is as bad as they've shown. If you like the sort of narrative that under a new coach it takes time to adjust, which I feel like we've heard that with the Packers, right? And the adjustment to a new offensive system with Matt LaFleur. We haven't really heard that with the Bengals, but if you believe that narrative, you think that maybe the Bengals will improve a little bit as the season progresses. Either that or they'll just give up. So I'm on the Bengals plus 13.5.
I've been on the Bengals a couple times on the road this year, and they have gotten the cover a couple times. They'll try to do that again here as a road dog, catching 13 at the Rams early game on Sunday. By the way, there are, always tracking if the NFL gets this right, there are nine early games and three afternoon games. So we're subjected to that kind of schedule in the NFL. At least it's not the 10-2 variety. By the way, Baltimore and Dallas, the two teams on byes this week. Mike Palm, best bet number one.
Well, I agree with Todd on this premise, and we used them last week, and we're going to use them again. I don't understand why the market is not recognizing the difference between Fitzpatrick and Rosen.
Yes.
It's stunning that the totals will move, but the sides won't move when we know Fitzpatrick is playing. This still is the Steelers team without a great defense. It still is the Steelers team that doesn't want to let Mason Rudolph, and I'm assuming he plays, throw the ball downfield. They're going to go with a lot of short passes, end arounds, that type of a run-based offense. We saw the Dolphins against a very good Bills defense last week be able to sustain drives and run the ball and move the chains. I just think 14 is way wide here. To your point, Gil, when you guess numbers on games,
yeah,
I thought this game was more like an 8 or 8.5. I couldn't believe it's 2 touchdowns. I'll take the Miami Dolphins on Monday night.
It's 14.5. Give them the extra half.
14.5. You get the hook. I will say this, and for those who didn't listen to Guessing Lines, because I think it's probably a similar audience, but, and thank you, by the way, to everybody who listens to it in podcast form after we air it on VSiN, because still great numbers on Guessing Lines. People find that show as great as they've always done based on the numbers. So thank you to everybody. But that was not only my worst guess of the week, and by worst, I mean furthest off. Let me not call it worst. It was not only my furthest off guess of the year. It is my furthest off guess in the history, the 9-year history of Guessing Lines. I had 7.5. 14 is where it's posted. I've never been that far off on a number ever guessing. Now, listen, my number might not be right either, but it certainly shouldn't be 14. There's no justification for it. And Todd, you and I were on the air last week, again, when Brian Flores said, we're going with Ryan Fitzpatrick, it's not going to be Josh Rosen. And that number against the Bills stayed put the whole way through at 17. That doesn't make any sense to me. This number doesn't make any sense to me, despite the fact that it's prime time and it's in Pittsburgh and any other narrative you want to associate with it. Give me the points. That's my first best bet as well on the Dolphins. I'll take the 14 and a hook happily.
By the way, the Dolphins should have won the football game. If they get it in there and to go up 21-9 instead of throwing the pick, they're probably going to win up 12.
It should also be noted that we barely got the cover too, because it could have been a very unlucky push. Ryan Fitzpatrick fumbles at the end, right? And the Dolphins happen to land on it at their own 5. So, it was Dolphins doing Dolphins things at the end. There's always that to worry about.
That was after onside's kick return for a touchdown, which is the new thing, the new rage all of a sudden.
Yeah. Rufus?
That was great. I had Bill's second half, so minus 8.5. So that was that saved me.
A fortuitous turn of events for you.
Wait, I didn't do my first best bet. My first best bet is going to be, Just to make it a little more entertaining, I'm going to go with over 45.5 in the Tampa-Tennessee game. And here's why. I think, first of all, that Tampa Bay is a great over team this year. They really are they can be explosive on offense, but defensively, they're an absolute dumpster fire. And now that Tannehill's in the game instead of Mariota, I feel like Tennessee has a little bit more firepower throwing the football, so I think they'll be able to move the ball and score some points against Tampa Bay. Now, Tennessee's defense is pretty good, but Tampa Bay has the ability to score pretty much on anybody as well. So to me, 45.5 is a little too low. I'm going to go over 45.5 for my best bet.
What's trippy about this podcast this week is that I have a visual on Rufus. So Rufus is tech savvy enough where I can actually see him, right? So not only, by the way, is he wearing a very nice shirt, which is black and checkered black and gray, but he's got a state-of-the-art microphone. Is that a blue? What is that, Rufus? That's a very nice microphone.
It is a blue.
Yeah, very nice.
I got enough bad feedback on my sound quality over the years with some crappy microphone I had with the Bet the Process podcast that I finally invested in a good one.
Yeah, no, that's a nice one right there. But in having the visual on Rufus, I can see his reactions to certain comments and make, and then he takes notes. So you obviously had a reaction to what Todd was saying there.
Well, I think my second best bet is might be the other side there. So we'll get into that later.
Okay. I think it's time for your second best bet because we've gone around the horn once. So what is your second best bet?
So it is the Tampa Bay, Tennessee under 45 and a half.
There you go.
Yeah.
And why? And why would you, what would you say? Why you?
I make the number 42 and a half and that could change a little based on weather. There's supposed to be a little drizzle. It's a dreary day in Nashville. So if there is rain, I'll have that slightly lower as well. But this is essentially a matchup of a slightly above average offense in Tampa Bay versus a slightly above average defense in Tennessee, and then a bad offense against a bad defense. So Tampa Bay is a pretty pass-friendly offense. They pass eighth most, or I expect them to, relative to expectation. Tennessee's kind of the other end of the spectrum in the 20s. But and especially with Tannehill at quarterback now, I do think that you may see a little bit more of Derrick Henry. But Tampa has some high-scoring games basically because their offense can put up garbage time points when they're down. And Jameis Winston is known to give some gifts to the opposing teams. But Tampa's allowed three defensive touchdowns. I feel like there's this narrative that Winston is going to give a lot of points, score a lot of points, but give up a lot of points to himself through interceptions and pick sixes. So they've allowed three defensive touchdowns and they've turned the ball over more than twice a game. And yes, Winston is that guy. He's not really going to change who he is, I don't think, at this point. He's a guy that he holds the ball a long time, which results in big plays, but it also results in a lot of sacks and it results in interceptions. You have to take the bad with the good. But what is interesting so far is that his average interception this year has come from ball snapped at his own 35-yard line, while Tampa's average offensive snap has been from the 50-yard line. So in the last 3 years, the average interception has been from a team's own 48-yard line. So there's not really so in a way, those interceptions that Winston has thrown has ended up costing, have ended up being over helping interceptions rather than like a red zone interception, which is going to be an under helping interception. So,
but isn't the sample size small, Rufus?
Of course, the sample size is small for that, for Winston's interceptions this year. I'm saying that so far this year they've helped the over, and so it makes Tampa Bay look like they're a higher scoring team. It makes their games look like they're higher scoring than they fundamentally should be. The other thing is he's thrown, 30% of his interceptions have been pick sixes this year. The league average is 11%, and Winston's historical rate is 10.3%. So you're not going to see, I think the sort of narrative that Winston is, that Winston's style of play leads to more points doesn't necessarily bear out in terms of, predictively.
So eat it, Todd.
Okay, well, I'm not making the bet off of Winston. I just think he's a bonus, but I'm just basing it on the fact I think instead of Mariota in there, I think they're going to be able to move it on Tampa Bay, and I think Tampa Bay's offense is decent. So we will see who is correct on this one.
So do you think Tannehill's a better quarterback than Mariota?
Unfortunately, I kind of think yes.
So I have Tannehill graded substantially worse than Mariota. I think that's probably a big part of it. In fact, I think with Mariota in there, this would not be a play for me.
See, that's what we were debating that on air this morning when we were talking about this game, because Tannehill in his one game back, right, one game, he was throwing the ball in tight quarters. He was making these passes that were pretty incredible given how his receivers were being covered. But I did say on the air, I'm like, is this sustainable? Was that just an aberrational thing? We're like, wow, Tannehill snuck that one in too. Oh my God, he made that pass too. And I don't know the answer to that. Like, I don't have like supreme confidence in that. I just know that Mariota's one skill set was he didn't turn the ball over at all, which is a pretty good skill set to have in the NFL. That'll get you through a lot of years. Obviously, his performance deteriorated recently that he's seen the bench, but I'm not so sure if I buy into Tannehill either.
I think Mariota is a John Fox quarterback. He's a guy who's going to give you keep the turnovers down, but he's not explosive. I think Tannehill will probably give you more turnovers, but he's a little more explosive.
What I mean, I haven't looked at this, but what was his sort of average depth of target when he was with the Dolphins? I kind of, if I remember correctly, he didn't throw a ton downfield, did he?
I think he did. More so than we saw last week for sure.
He also ran like back with the Finns. He ran the ball a decent amount. Yeah, so
we'll see if we see that post injury. All right, so you guys are oppo on that one. Todd is over. And you are under, Rufus. That's what we got down here.
That's correct.
All right. Mike Palm, Mike Palmieri, Mike Palmetto, what is your number two pick?
I'm a recent believer in this team, and I didn't know that if Jacoby Brissett could take a team to the playoffs. But as this season has worn on and they've played through injuries, I've become more and more impressed with the Colts. I think this is a good spot for them. Second consecutive home game. There's a big coaching mismatch here. I think Reich is just so good. I like their red zone defense. Flacco was never that good or he's deteriorated through age. He just doesn't sense any pressure in the pocket. He's like a statue back there. I'm not impressed with this Broncos offense. I don't think they're going to put up a ton of points. I'll lay under a touchdown here, 5.5 with the Colts at home in the late game against Denver.
I'm not sure Flacco's alive part of the time. Listen, I don't want to mimic every one of your picks here, Mike, but people have guessing lines to go to so that they know I'm not making it up right now as we go. But this was one of my best bets in terms of just being more incredulous about the line. Now, nothing was like the Pittsburgh-Miami line, and there's another one that I thought was further off too. But if you're giving me less than a touchdown here on the Colts at home with Jacoby Brissett, the very ball-conscious, again, Jacoby Brissett with a minimum, I think it was of like a 200, or I can't remember what the minimum passes is, but whatever that minimum is, he's historically good in terms of protecting the football. Again, that sample size is smaller than it will be as we move forward. But I'm not impressed with the Broncos at all, and I think the Colts are a sneaky good football team. I'm with you. I'm taking the Colts. I'm laying the 6.5 or whatever it is right now. I think it's 5.5 now. 5.5 in this game. It's gone down a little, so I'm doing that as well. Rufus, I know you've been on the Broncos. You said this earlier on the show. That's kind of been your team, perhaps to your ultimate dissatisfaction. But you like the Broncos here, do you?
To my chagrin, I do. I took the Broncos at +6 earlier in the week. I have the Broncos as basically an average team. I think, obviously Flacco looked really bad. I agree. But they have their defense is good. In the trenches, their offensive line did not. I'll be honest, their offensive line looked pretty awful last week. But a lot of that was Flacco and the fact that, sacks are mostly a quarterback stat. But now I'm trying to look up my line numbers for the Broncos here.
Would this be one of your three best bets, or this is just a random bet you have?
No. This is like, honestly, I didn't see a lot of value on the card this week, but
okay.
Bengals and Broncos are two. I'll be honest, I think that right now, the game of football is changing a little bit, and I do think my priors, in a way, are maybe overfit to a different era. And you have two quarterbacks in like Flacco and Dalton who have a lot of experience. They have a lot of starts, and in general, guys that have a lot of starts get those starts because they're good quarterbacks. Because they've played well in the past. And so I think that, guys like Breeze, Roethlisberger, Philip Rivers, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, guys that like have played a long time, kind of have in a way shaped the sort of experience factor in my priors. Whereas, as a result, like a guy like Joe Flacco or someone like Andy Dalton is in a way, I think, probably gonna be a little bit overinflated in my numbers just because of that sort of experience fixed effect in my model.
I actually think that's a great discussion. We kind of delve into that on a numbers game on VSiN, Sirius XM channel 204, weekday mornings, Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 Pacific, 10 to noon Eastern. We do that quite often. Not often, but every once in a while, I will make this point about the difference in betting, say, baseball and tennis versus the National Football League. Baseball and tennis, to me, feel very logical and very cerebral based on numbers vis-a-vis the betting line. In the NFL, and this is not exactly what you're saying, but it's sort of a cousin of what you're saying, akin to it, which is, you know, also the coaching differences for me, and I always say this with the NFL, that if you could only have one, if one tool was at your disposal, just one, in picking NFL games, and it was just that you power-ranked coaches, if that was the only thing at your disposal, you might do better betting the NFL than running through numbers anymore. Because the difference, the chasm between the have and the have-nots in the NFL, and specifically with the coaches, is so vast now that it almost diminishes the importance of your numbers sometimes. I don't know if I'm articulating that well, but just sort of throw that out there, Rufus.
No, that makes a ton of sense. And Frank Reich is an amazing coach. You see, I mean, he'll go for it in the first quarter at his own 40-yard line on 4th and 2, I mean, which is what he should do. And so I completely agree. And I think the hardest thing to do in the NFL is to sort of distinguish the value of the quarterback versus the offense surrounding him and versus the scheme he's in. And then when you add on, you know, what coaches do in-game, we can sort of see the value a coach can add with good in-game decisions. That's kind of what you see on Twitter, you know, discussions of, you know, mistakes by coaches. It's generally bad in-game decisions that we can quantify. But what's a lot harder to gauge is the value of a coach schematically. Because I think for years, like Andy Reid is a guy that was awful with clock management, but, you know, his schemes were always good. He always, you know, he was, I guess, great in the locker room at motivating players and all that. And so his teams would do really well. So, I mean, that's, of course, it's definitely, I agree, Gil, it's something that's hard to do, and coaches do matter.
Yeah.
By the way, I just looked up Flacco's numbers this year on, you know, Pro Football Focus actually has graded him out as an slightly above average quarterback this year so far.
Stop it. Stop yeah. it, Pro Football Focus.
I'm sort of, yeah.
That's the corruptible. That's the corruptible numbers factor in these models. You know, I love models.
That's not a model.
Okay, well, however they pro football, whatever ranking you just called, they have some type of way of figuring out who they call an above average quarterback. And all I'm saying is, whatever the numbers are that they're plugging in, it's numbers in, numbers out. And if they're shitty numbers in, you're shitty numbers out. And if they're good numbers in, they're good numbers out. So I don't agree with that ranking of Flacco as slightly above average.
I mean, personally, I don't see how. I haven't watched every snap, but what their rankings are, that's what their rankings are based on. They literally grade out each throw and each play and say, like, it's a bunch of humans doing this.
Well, so my humans may be better than their humans. So,
you know, in this case, seems right.
I've watched every snap. So I cannot call Joe Flacco. At best, I could call him average. I cannot call him above average. I mean,
that's what he is.
What you're really asking, Todd, is have they seen his face in any of these games? Because not only does he appear to not care while he's on the field, I'm not sure he's alive. I really don't believe, like, some of the times I'm like, dude, check if that dude has a pulse. Like, where's the passion in this? Like, it's like, I'm not putting my money behind this guy. And that's when your human eye test is like, I can't do this anymore. And it corrupts, you know, I don't know what Pro Football Focus is doing to determine that, but I'm kind of with you on that, Todd. Maybe your human brain is better than theirs in this case.
I don't know whether I am or whether I'm not, but come on. Now, I do want to agree with Rufus. I'm not making this one of my picks, but is that it? By the way, I've only given one pick. Is that Rufus's official third pick, Denver +5.5?
Yes, Rufus has three, yeah. And Mike and I already have two, so you're behind here, Todd.
I'm going to come out looking like an idiot at the end of this week. It's going to be great.
No,
I'm not going to take Denver as one of my picks, but I do want to say that I lean to Rufus and against you and Mike, Gil, because I think that Indianapolis is coming off a big win And Denver is coming off an absolute ass-whooping against the Chiefs. And I never want to have the team that just looked great against the team that just looked horrendous. So to me, I would have to lean Denver. The other thing that sticks in my mind is the Raiders going into Indy and running it all over them. And I don't see why Denver couldn't be able to run it and then keep it close late. So I'll lean with Rufus on Denver against you and Mike, but I'm not going to use that as any of my picks. But now do you want me to give you my second pick?
Please.
Okay. My second pick. Oh, and by the way, Rufus, I loved what you said about Andy Reid schematically, because I was saying that today on a numbers game when we were saying Kansas City getting 3.5. I love Mahomes. I think he's, it's a little too soon to make him Jesus. He's not that great. He's fantastic, but he's not Jesus. So Andy Reid schematically with all those weapons is – you know, I think it's too many points with Green Bay. I'm not going to use that one either, but I still think Green Bay is giving too many points to Kansas City because Andy Reid is a great schemer. So I totally agree with you on that.
You should go through the whole schedule and give us all your leans except for your best bets and then finally get to your best bets.
That was just 2 points that I wanted to make that you guys were just discussing.
So Todd, I think that's a great point with Andy Reid. I mean, look what he did with Alex Smith.
Exactly. But Gil likes to get on me, and Mike likes to get on me. You know, both of them are they're just whatever, they're hard asses. What can I tell you? Now, my second pick, I'm going to go with a team that we all know and love. It's called the Miami Dolphins.
Oh,
Miami Dolphins.
There we go.
Miami Dolphins plus 14.5. We've already discussed it ad nauseum. Mason Rudolph is going to throw that little dinker ball. And what does Pro Football Focus say about his 22-for-25 against Cincinnati when he didn't throw the ball more than 2 yards down the goddamn field? So I don't want to hear about rankings and this bullshit that these people talk. Oh, Mason Rudolph was 22-for-25. He was fantastic. No, he wasn't. I could have thrown those little dinker balls.
Well, hold on. You asked a question. Rufus, do you have that in front of you?
I can pull it up. I'm pulling it up right now. I'm curious. I just think this is a good reference because I was curious with the Flacco how bad he actually had been. And no, actually, that's the one game that Rudolph graded above average against Cincinnati.
Of course he did.
There you go.
Guess what?
Maybe he audibled into the dinker ball plays.
Anybody could have done that. If you watch that game, stats lie. Every single play was there was the wide receiver running in motion, snap it to Rudolph, he throws it 1.5 yards to the guy, and he runs around the end, and Cincinnati couldn't figure it out. So I don't want to hear about Mason Rudolph. Give me a effing break.
Will Miami be able to figure that out, though? Look at their defense.
Well, I just think that Miami's defense is not as bad as people think it is. It's not good. I'm not saying it's good. But I'm not saying it's as bad as people think it is. Remember, this is a team that went to Buffalo last week, and should have been up 21-9. This team is not that horrendous. If Fitz can not be bad Fitz, granted, if Fitz is bad Fitz and he throws 18 interceptions like he's wont to do at times, yeah, we're going to go down in smoke. But if Fitz can play an adequate game, manage the game, play decently, we're not getting beat by 14.5 by the Pittsburgh towel waivers. Okay, Miami plus 14.5. Miami Dolphins.
Okay, so Mike, me, and you are all on the Dolphins. Rufus is on the Bengals and the Broncos. It's the poo-poo platter on this podcast. We could all look terrible after this, but we shall see. Mike Palm, you haven't given a third pick, right?
Yeah, I have.
Under 42 Minnesota Skins.
Since Rufus and I have already given our third pick, it's time for Todd to give 2 more leans in his third pick.
All right, Todd, you go ahead. You give your third.
Okay. I will give you my third best bet, and I'm going to go with the Carolina Panthers, Riverboat Ron. I like this football team. I think they're flying a little bit under the radar. I think the San Francisco 49ers, while very good, have had a bunch of good games in a row before the slop game. And I like getting good teams with more. I mean, San Francisco and Carolina here, they're saying that San Francisco is 3 points better on a neutral field, which is why they're 6-point favorites in this game. And I do not think there's 3 points difference between San Francisco and Carolina. Maybe 1, maybe 2. I don't think San Francisco is worth 3 more on a neutral field. So I like the Carolina Panthers. I think Allen, as long as he doesn't make too many mistakes, he can throw a nice ball out there. I like their defense with Kuechly. Of course, I get the little running back who can run for, miles and miles. I think that Carolina will be able to at least control the Niner running game to some extent. 6 points is a ton of points in a National Football League game when two adequate teams are going against each other. I'm going to go with Riverboat Ron and the Carolina Panthers plus the 6.
Thanks for the showmanship also, Todd, on that. Are you worried that Kyle Allen's fumble luck is just off the charts?
You know, you love to get on this Allen guy for his fumbles. I remember seeing one of them was totally not his fault. He got smashed in the back when nobody, he didn't even
okay.
see the guy.
All right, we'll take that off the chart. But the fact is that their fumble luck has been really good. So, I mean, that just gives me a moment of pause is all I'm saying.
Okay, well, I mean, look, fumble luck can go both ways. What's the Niners' fumble luck?
I don't know offhand, but it's not as fortunate as that of the Carolina Panthers. By the way, the slop at FedEx Field, can we just talk about that for a second? How is it that they cannot get this right? Like, even in great conditions at FedEx Field, they always complain about how difficult that field is to maintain. It's like, oh, the Mid-Atlantic region of the country. What's so difficult about the Mid-Atlantic sod? Like, I don't understand that, and that was a slop field. And the Redskins end up being the second team in the last 25 years to score no points and cover the spread against the Niners. So you're on the Panthers. Are any of these dogs, by the way, is anybody sprinkling anything on the money line on any of these dogs, or are we just doing this ATS?
Personally, I'm not putting anything on the money lines just because it's you know, I'm trying to get full limits early in the week. So
I understand.
You know, maybe later in the week.
You don't piss anybody off at this point. My third, by the way, is the New Orleans Saints. I realize this is, well, let me tell you how much it is right now. New Orleans is a 10-point favorite. I get 10. 10-point favorite.
I see them 10.5 most places, Gil, no?
No.
I 10.5 minus 125, though.
Yeah, it's 10 consensus, I think. Yeah, I see 10 minus 108, 10 minus 105. It's 10. New Orleans given 10 against Arizona. This was my second most off guess of the year. Again, this is one of these weird years, which has never happened before with these guesses, where I am authentically way off the numbers on some of these. And so I was 4 points off on this. I thought this should be 14 points. Arizona comes off a win over the Giants. The Giants are dreadful. The week before, Arizona got by Atlanta. Atlanta's not doing anything big. And in that game against Atlanta, Arizona had not one, not two, but at least three instances in that game where they got the benefits of calls that could have just as easily gone against them and really determined the outcome of that game. Obviously, Matt Bryant missing an extra point at the end did as well. And Kyler Murray, sort of up and down, sort of a choppy early regular season. I don't know if they found something in Chase Edmonds or not. I'm not going to read too much into it. But the New Orleans Saints, whether it's Bridgewater or Breeze here, and I think it should be Bridgewater because I don't know why they're rushing Drew Breeze back with a bye coming up.
I thought they said he was playing.
Breeze is playing now? Is that the word?
What?
I thought they were saying that Breeze said he was going to play, but I don't. Maybe I'm wrong. I thought Jeff Parles said that this morning.
Did he? Well, let me check on that while we go through this. But I'm taking the Saints. Look, I know it's 10 points. I know you're not going to make a huge profit long term doing this as a rule in the NFL. But I think they're a vastly better football team. They did what they did against the Bears' supposedly vaunted defense last week without Alvin Kamara, without Jared Cook. Give me the Saints. I'm laying the points. And if I don't cover here, tip of the cap to the Cardinals. Some bets you have to be willing to lose. This would be one of them.
As Mike would say, he doesn't want to hear my leans, but I'm leaning with you.
If Breeze plays, I definitely like that. I just Googled it, and yeah, Breeze says he expects to play, apparently, according to ESPN.
And so that didn't move either, right, on that news. That's sitting right where it is.
So was the game even when, like, it wasn't even on the board at a lot of places for a while.
Oh, it was up from the beginning, I thought, from Monday anyway.
It was. So I'm seeing, like, Pinnacle didn't post anything till yesterday afternoon or evening.
All right, we had a bunch of lines.
I saw it on the board at South Point all week.
Yeah.
I have it in my spreadsheet as blank. Same with the Falcons game.
The Falcons game is still blank where I am. I don't see a number on that game anywhere between Seattle and the Falcons because we don't know if it's Matt Ryan or not.
6.5 on Bet Online has 6.5 for Seattle.
That's the only place with a line. Yeah, it's the only place with
a line. Is it even bettable? Probably not.
Probably not for very low limits. Support for today's Beating the Book podcast comes, as always, from our friends at bookmaker.eu. I have been saying it all season long. I will continue to say it. That bookmaker.eu is an industry leader for close to 30 years. You should know that by now. Pro players consider them a must because they're first to post odds, they take the highest limits, and most importantly, pride themselves on never having kicked out a winning player. That is huge in this day and age. Bookmakers, a high-volume sportsbook best suited for not only the sophisticated player who understands sports betting, but also to large recreational players as well. And their motto is where the lines originate, because chances are the sportsbook at which you've been betting all along follows their lines. And right now, if you visit bookmaker.eu/gill, that's bookmaker.eu/GILL, you can claim an exclusive 100% welcome bonus of up to $300. Once again, that's bookmaker.eu/gill, GILL, to join and claim your welcome bonus of up to $300 right now. Don't miss out. Teaser of the week. Now, let me just say this. Old Stanford Wong, these aren't really working out this year. But let's give a two-team, six-point teaser of the week. If you want to make it 6.5 or 7 points, we'll let you do that as well. But Rufus, if you were forced to make a two-team tease play, which would it be for you this week?
I mean, there's really only one option. I'd tease Tampa Bay from 2.5 to 8.5, and I'd tease, where are they? The Philadelphia Eagles from 2.5 to 8.5 also.
Yeah, that's probably the one.
I don't think that needs an explanation, does it?
No, none of that does. But again...
I make the Tampa Bay game. Like, honestly, I took Tampa. I got them at 3. So I do lean them at 2.5. I wouldn't play them at 2.5. And with the Eagles, I make that spread just 1. So, that kind of helps it as well. Plus, obviously, getting the 3 and the 7, which, the 3 and the 7 aren't arguably worth as much anymore now with the longer extra points. But I think it obviously depends on what you're having to lay for that's a two team 6.5 point teaser too.
Yeah, no standard tease down through 7 and 3 though on the home favorite side. That is true. All right, so Rufus going with Tampa Bay, teasing it up through the 3 and the 7 to let's call it 8.5. Philadelphia, same deal. Just before we move on from that, Philadelphia looked so bad against the Dallas Cowboys. Do you worry about them in a sense? I know I understand taking your teaser aside makes perfect sense, but just as a football team that a lot of people had high expectations for, do you look at them and think that they are in some ways fraudulent at all?
If you look at any good team at the end of the season, they end up having bad games. A few weeks ago looking through some of these historically good teams because I was interested. Do you remember back in the 90s when the 49ers were huge favorites in the Super Bowls?
Yes.
Against against the Chargers. And I was like, how is, I feel like I can't imagine in this era you having a 17-point favorite in the Super Bowl. And so I looked through and then I saw the Niners got blown out in a game in week 5 or something.
Against the Philadelphia Eagles in San Francisco.
And I was like, yeah. I wonder what people were saying then, creating what narratives they created at the time. So I just think there is a lot of randomness in football you're not always going to have your A game every week. There's stuff you may not be prepared for schematically. I don't want to, honestly, it would surprise me if that was the case with the Cowboys just because it's Jason Garrett. And so, I don't think he's any genius, although Kellen Moore is a little better, but I think the Eagles do have a talented team. They've been banged up in the secondary. I think that, my player level model likes them a lot more than the Massey Peabody team level model. So I think the talent's there.
By the way, 1994, and I'm not looking this up, but it was against the Philadelphia Eagles because I remember it very well. The Niners were a juggernaut, and they had this weird game at home where they got crushed by the Eagles. I'm going to, off the top of my head, if for some reason I remember the score, I think it was 40-8, something like that, because it was this weird score. And when you ask, what was the narrative back then? The narrative back then was people just raised their hands and like, huh, that was weird. I have no explanation for that game. And as the season went on and the Niners won the Super Bowl, people were like, wow, what was that? That was basically the extent of the analysis back then, as I recall it, as a child or as a young man anyway. Mike Palm, teaser of the week.
Okay, Gil, I was so excited. My biggest accomplishment of the week last week wasn't that the Nats passed on the National League pennant ticket, but that I hit a teaser to go 2-5 on the year. You've actually got me betting teasers. I actually bet live a teaser. I said, I cannot be this bad at teasers. It has to turn. So I actually bet the one last week. This week, I'm going to go with the Lions. I'm going to tease the Lions down from 7-1 against the Giants. I think the Lions are better on both sides of the ball than the Giants. I mean, this is such a tough division, the NFC North. I mean, I personally think the Vikings are the best team and the Packers are right behind, but the Lions are not that far behind them as well. And the Bears are, not awful, but probably overvalued. I'm going to take the Lions down to 1 at home against the Giants, who really can't stop anybody. I think Stafford will put up big numbers this week. I know Kerryon Johnson might be out, but I think the Lions are capable of hanging 31 or 35 on the Giants here. So we'll tease that down under 7 and under 3-1. And then I'm going to go the other way with a dog. I'm going to take the Chargers up to 10 against the Bears. I actually bet the Chargers on the money line in this game. I just think Trubisky is that bad. I mean, it's deceptive to think that, you know, they only lost that game by around 10 points to the Saints. They were completely dominated. They cannot move the ball. Trubisky cannot throw down the field. I mean, what are they averaging? Three or four yards per pass? I mean, completed pass, not attempt. But you have to factor Anthony Lynn in here. He's probably worth, in a game that's decided by a score, worth -3 or -4 to the Chargers and the way he handles end of games. So let's go all the way up to 10 with the Chargers.
That Chargers-Tennessee finish last Sunday, one of the most incredible endings to any football game. I had Tennessee, so it worked out for me. If you ever hear me complaining about any outcome of any NFL game ever, remind me of that one. As two Chargers touchdowns, at least on the field, get reversed, and it's followed by a subsequent fumble that was recovered by the Tennessee Titans. Amazing sequence at the end of the game. That after the referees seemed to have botched Ryan Tannehill's or the Titans' third down, and then Ryan Tannehill's sneak on fourth down on the previous drive. So it was a whole, you know, just consistent with the referee shenanigans of this year in the NFL. And those who had the Titans get fortunate. Those who had the Chargers see the most Chargers thing ever happen to them with Anthony Lynn as head coach in that game. All right, so mine is also Rufus's. It's the same thing. I'm doing the typical Stanford Wong teaser. Philadelphia, Tampa Bay. To me, that's probably the only teaser. At least that's the obvious teaser to make, and I'll go with that. And I don't think Buffalo is going to blow Philadelphia out, and I don't think Tennessee is going to blow Tampa Bay out. And so I feel comfortable with that one. Todd?
Yes, I would just like to say unable to be challenged or denied. Yes, that is the definition of the word indisputable. Indisputable evidence. That's all I'm going to say, folks. Indisputable evidence.
What Todd is saying is that he had the Chargers, and that although our laws of human beings and gravity and physics suggest that those were probably short of the goal line, there was no legitimate visual evidence to have overturned that, and Todd is very bitter. Correct, Todd?
I'm slightly bitter. I think both balls were not touchdowns, but clearly I've watched 1 billion games, and they never overturn unless it's unable to be challenged or denied the definition of the word indisputable. Thank you, NFL. As far as my teaser goes, and Gil, you said you liked my showmanship. In order to do my teaser this week, I will be doing the song da 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 bum bum bum. I'm just kidding.
Please,
anyways,
please stop.
I thought you might like that song. Yeah. That's a good one. That always gets me fired up for football.
Yeah.
Anyways, I will go with the same teasers as both you and Rufus. Tampa Bay +8.5. That's the only one I'd be a little worried about. I think Philly is definitely going to show up this week and play some offense in Buffalo, and I don't think Buffalo is the kind of team that usually wins by margin, so I will go Tampa Bay with the +8.5 and Philly with the +8.5. One other thing I want to say, just so the people don't think I'm saying there's something, I think models are very important, and I think they have a lot to say. I just think that a lot of times some people's models have flaws in them, and the numbers can be corruptible, especially in a sport like football. So I'm not against models. I'm against shit-in, shit-out models. And I think there's a lot of models out there that, while they may be accurate 85% of them, they may have 15% of a blind spot, so to speak.
I don't have any problem.
I think that's a really good point,
yeah,
Todd.
Yeah.
I completely agree, and I think especially in a game like football where you do have such a small sample size and you do, you know, in a season, and you do have so many moving parts and things that are dependent on each other in context. I mean, it's very tough. It's very tough to model football, And, you know, honestly, there's a lot of art that goes into models too, and sort of intuition and trying to come up with, you know, something logical. So
yeah,
I'm not explaining
this. I have zero problem with that statement, Todd. In fact, I would even suggest this. With legalization, we now see, obviously, a proliferation of people who are, you know, instant supposed experts on all things sports betting. And part and parcel with that is when you see someone who claims to have a model, there seems to be, and you guys can tell me if I'm wrong or not, but I get the sense that by simple virtue of the fact that that person claims to have a model, they are instantly, I won't say deified, but they are instantly canonized into, oh, this person must be smart. They have a model, for God's sakes. And
or they're called themselves sharp.
Or they're mocked.
They call themselves sharp. All of a sudden, they're deified as sharp.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Well, I'll get a goddamn sharp certificate, too.
I think you could purchase one of those down the street, Todd. The, no.
Can you send me one in the mail, Todd?
Yes.
I want one.
Can you buy a few?
And sign it for me.
Yeah. but that, I don't know, I'm sensitive to that because I sort of get that feeling where I'm like, oh, well, like, how do we know? Like, all of a sudden, this person's supposed to be super smart just because they have a model? Like, I don't know that. So anyway, it's one of the things that I've been sensitive to. All right, final two questions. Yes,
and Gil, by the way, even guys who have good models, very good models, doesn't mean the modeling is 100%.
Oh, no.
Though some of these models may have slight blind spots.
For sure.
Completely correct.
For sure. I mean, look.
Or big ones in my case.
Rufus may know who I'm talking about when I refer to somebody who I know who has been doing models for decades. And let's just say it's wonderful to talk about and it's wonderful to analyze and some of the stuff is really valuable, but there's also a lot of stuff that ultimately is not that valuable and has blind spots. So, yeah, I mean, nothing is infallible, right?
I think I know who you're talking about.
I think you might. Let's do the final two questions here, boys and girls. Final two questions as we close every Megapod with. First of which of the big favorites you believe is the most likely to lose outright? If you had to choose one of these, who would you think it is? Minnesota, here are your candidates. Minnesota, 17-point favorites tonight against the Skins. New Orleans, 10-point favorites, 10.5, 10, let's call it 10. No, 10.5. I think you're right, Todd. I'm seeing more 10.5s now. No, I see more 10s. 10-point favorites at home against Arizona. Just to make this interesting, let me knock it down just below the 7. So Jacksonville, 6.5-point favorites at home against the Jets. Detroit, 7-point favorites at home against the Giants. Niners, 6-point favorites at home against Carolina. Houston, 7-point favorites at home against Oakland.
Ding, 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 ding.
All right, wait your damn turn. New England, 13-point favorites against Freddie Kitchens and the Cleveland Browns. And then Monday night, Pittsburgh, 14-point favorites at home, maybe even 14.5 against the Miami Dolphins. Todd, does that mean you think Houston is the one?
I think they're the most likely because I think that you know, you have the Bill O'Brien factor, and my model says that Bill O'Brien loves to keep the other fucking team in the game. Pardon me if I can't say the F word on the show, but I will say that he loves to keep the other team in the game. Oakland Raiders can run the football. Their defense is an abysmal bunch of garbage, but they actually can run the football, and I wouldn't be surprised if Bill O'Brien gives us a little Anthony Lynn-like jokerism late in the game and Oakland pulls some kind of stunner.
Rufus, same question.
So wait, was Denver Indy not eligible?
Because it's kind of 5.5, so I didn't put that in.
But... also, yeah, let's not make that eligible because I've already discussed it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to take Carolina, which, Todd, you're on that game overall, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I don't have much of an opinion. It's or not enough of an opinion to bet it. I make it a 4.5-point spread. But I do think... you do have narratives working in the right direction with, you know, as Todd said, like San Fran coming off of a, you know, a really, well, actually, I don't want to say they came off a good performance because I think you can kind of just throw away that, the Mud Bowl, right? I mean,
yeah, but
I don't know
before
what
that, Rufus,
but
before the games that, before that
course,
were fantastic.
And the narrative, I mean, they're undefeated. Although I am a little concerned about Kyle Allen. I do think Kyle Allen is not a good quarterback. He's played okay. He's 5-0 career as a starter, but there's a reason he was an undrafted free agent. And occasionally there are quarterbacks that are, you know, late round picks like Tom Brady that end up being great quarterbacks. But the odds, you know, even after a 5-0 start, the odds of Kyle Allen being someone with staying power are quite low. But hopefully, maybe he can continue to ride the hot hand, or at least the lukewarm hand, and beat San Fran on the road. So I think San Fran, one thing they have surprisingly been recently is a little bit conservative with their play calling and offense. And I've heard Kyle Shanahan talk about how they're okay with winning with defense and getting 3 yards per carry sometimes, and which keeps the opponent in the game. It does. And so if the defense can't hold, then, you know, we could see Carolina winning.
Kyle Shanahan, who for the first time in his career, he says, can rely on a defense. He says it's a very funny feeling for him that he's never had this before. He's like, wow, I can actually rely on my defense. Mikey, same question.
I look at the Texans, and I this Raiders travel schedule, I know they got a bye in between, but never being at home seems to be a very difficult spot for them to keep going on the road. I look at the 49ers, but how long can Kyle Allen's fumble luck continue? I think this will be a great game, but I still think this 49ers defense is underrated. New Orleans, Minnesota, 49ers. I think these are the three best teams with a chance to get to the Super Bowl because of their defense. I'm going to go to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
God, we are we are so aligned, Mike. Yeah, that's where I was going.
Mikey.
I never heard you talk about this, Gil. So I didn't know that, but...
No, I haven't. I have never talked about it, but that's who I was going to pick.
Here's what I like.
Yeah.
I like the fact that Le'Veon Bell rallied around his quarterback and then playing that idiotic decision to air the ghost comments. The Jets are not as bad as they looked on Monday night. I'm still not sold on the Jacksonville offense. I know Minshew's been serviceable, but I think the Jets bounce back here. I think if they can give Darnold time, I just think that this game is ripe for an upset and a bounce back spot for the Jets.
Yeah, I think six too many. I'm not even going to add anything to that. I immediately gravitated towards this game. The Jets aren't as bad as they looked Monday night. How could you be? I mean, Sam Darnold does do this one thing where if he starts out poorly, have you ever seen a quarterback who spirals as rapidly as that guy does in game and in a situation like that? He's like, oh, I threw two picks, let me just go crazy and make the worst decisions here down the stretch. I know that doesn't sound like that. That's a vote for the Jets, but I do think they're a far better football team than that. I think after they beat the Cowboys the week before, we called them, you know, if they have Sam Darnold, maybe they're a perfectly average football team. So I would say if any of the big favorites that we just mentioned were to lose, I would go to this game because I'm not sold on Jacksonville either. So Jacksonville would be my choice.
Gil?
Yes?
Before we go to the final question, can I ask Rufus a question?
Please.
Rufus, so I think I can say with confidence for the other three of us, Gil, Todd, and myself, that in terms of volume, we do more in-game wagering than pre-flop wagering. How do you approach in-game wagering, and how much of, let's say, a percentage of your volume of wagering is it?
So I don't do any live wagering. I bet second halves, but I don't bet nearly as much on second halves as I used to, at least for football. I mean, it used to be maybe 4 or 5 years ago, maybe 75% of my football volume was second halves. I had a model that did quite well, but I think the market has caught up a little bit there, and so there's not nearly as many opportunities. But the issue, I mean, live betting is very labor intensive and time intensive, and the other thing is there are issues with limits, and as well as particular books, I think mostly in New Jersey, waiting for approval and kind of free rolling themselves.
Right.
That's why you only go with commercials, Rupert.
Right. Yeah.
Do you find yourself doing more of your betting in New Jersey in terms of legal sports books?
Well, more than when there weren't legal sports books in New Jersey. Yes.
Well, no, I meant vis-a-vis versus Nevada.
I think it's no, I think still more in Nevada, but
okay.
New Jersey does have better offerings for certain things like golf. The FanDuel, for example, has like top 10, 20, 30, 40 for tournaments like yes or no's and more of the European offerings, but the problem is the books in New Jersey are more of the European style books generally and more likely to limit winning bettors.
I have sat with Rufus in the past on College Football Saturday and a Pro Football Sunday and watched you do your halftime wagering. This is, like you said, 4 years ago or something like that. And you were massive volume for that type of wager. So it's interesting to hear that, you know, things change, right? For sure. They do in sports betting.
Yeah. I was returning a lot on NFL and college football halftimes. In the last 3 years, it's basically been break even. So yeah, it kind of just abruptly, you know, the winds of change arrived.
Yeah.
Cue Todd with the Winds of Change song.
Rufus, are you? Oh, I don't know that one. Rufus, are you aware though of the incredible disparity between books on in-game lines?
Yes, I am. Okay. I know that
it's just more of a limits issue. That sounds to be the labor intensiveness and the limits are the reason you don't really want to do
right.
it.
And I don't even have a live model myself. I guess I tried to build one maybe a decade ago when I was like, this is going to be the future. But you're having to monitor a bunch of games at the same time, and it's hard to really scale it. That's the biggest thing.
And you have a life now, Rufus. You have a life now. You have other.
And I have a life.
Yeah.
If not a wife,
Rufus, if I can give you one tip. A life is negative EV. Very negative.
That's why I waited 10 years to have a life. Can I follow up and ask, since you guys are betting live, what type of live betting are you doing? Do you monitor all these games going on at the same time and look for opportunities? Or are you just zeroing in on a few games?
I do the former, Mikey.
I would say I will focus on an NFL on a 10 a.m. slate with 8 to 9 games on 2 or 3 games that I'm looking at to find value. I do a lot of baseball and hockey in game, and it's typically on games I've already pre-flop bet and I have a lean to already or theory on the game or somewhere where I disagree with the pre-flop market. I'll focus on those games more. Obviously, it's easier now when you get to the playoffs because there's fewer games you can focus on in baseball. But for me, for limits aren't a problem because both pre-flop and endgame, I'm a $500 to $3,000 better, so I don't really have to come up against those limits.
Well, I mean, I would think one thing with in-game betting is you can craft yourself quite a large position if you like.
Yes.
You know, let's say you like one team at one commercial break, and then you're probably going to like them. You might continue to like them, but do you? I mean, so. Do you have an idea of what you're looking for before the game?
So I'll give you an example. Rufus, I'll give you an example of what I'm looking for often. Very often late in the second quarter, we've talked about this on a numbers game with Gil's show many times. Late in the second quarter, there are massive mistakes very often by the books. One game that comes to mind was the Seattle-LA Ram Thursday night game a couple weeks ago, where it was 14-6 with a minute 40 to go. Seattle had the ball at the Ram 30, and it was 4th-and-1. They were deciding whether to kick the field goal or not. If they kick the field goal, you're at 23, and you have to assume the Rams are going to get 3 more on the other side, or at least 2.5, you know, from an expected return. Mm-hmm. And they put it up at 49.5, which was obviously slightly short because the second half line had to have been 24.5 because the original line was 49. So they were really doing, you know, and of course Seattle could have gotten a touchdown and or the Rams could have gotten a touchdown, which is exactly what happened. So you ended up getting on the good side of 24 when 24.5 is going to be the second half line. So if you like it over anyways and you're getting the extra point there, it's like it's a delicious spot. That's just one example. I mean, there's a lot of examples, obviously.
Do you find, I know that the end of game scenarios are the hardest for the books to model. Like,
yes.
No, like, it is really hard to model live football without like simulation based stuff. And so I think bettors have, there's definitely more opportunities there. Have you found that?
I would agree with that wholeheartedly, both in football and in baseball, by the way. I think that they have real trouble late in baseball games, and I think they have real trouble late in football games. In fact, in football games, like, you can almost take it to the extreme. If you're watching a game, you can see on the screen, based on who, you know, the personnel that they bring into a game and based on the in-game number they're throwing out there, that it's almost a freebie for you at the end. Like, if it's a 24-point spread and then it's minus 24, whatever, you can see the intentions of that team at that point. Baseball's a little more mechanical, but I think they have more difficulty for sure the later in games. For me, it's much...
By the way, last night, Gil, last night was a perfect example with the Fernando Rodney 12. because even though Rodney wasn't the mistake, you were still getting 2.5 innings of great hitting teams, and you were only costing you 2 runs, and you knew Houston would have all their shitballers in because they were down 8 runs, and Washington was going to they were going to give you Rodney, and that number is just not a correct number because 2.5 innings, 2 runs, that's based off the original line. That's just not right.
And no model necessarily is going to know the personnel, like the anticipated personnel coming in, or
that's right.
Bill Belichick is punting from his opponent's 31, which basically signals that he's done scoring points for the game.
I'd add to this, Rufus, to your end of game question. You know, there's instances in football where they'll post a number. Let's say a team is ahead by 6 and the other team has the ball in a disadvantaged situation, either deep in their own territory or they take a sack and it's 2nd and 18, and they'll post the team that's ahead minus, say, 6.5, minus 300, and there's 4 minutes to go in the game. Well, the only way you're gonna cover that is if you get a pick 6 or a scoop 6, because if they stop them on downs, one first down will run out, and it doesn't model that. And, you can lay 300 and 400 in some of those spots because it's really 7 or 8 to 1 that that's going to happen. The other thing I like to do with baseball is, William Hill offers in-game first 5, right? So then I'm a first 5 better because I can't bet full games because of bullpens. I want to take every bullpen out of play because of the unpredictability, right? So, like last night, you get 4 runs in the first. And then going to the third, the 5-inning line is still 6.5. Well, it opened in the first 5 innings. The number is 3.5. Now it's 2.5 for 3 innings. The math is on your side. It's going to be under. You're getting a better value on terms of at-bats to number of runs scored. So I just think you're looking for those opportunities.
I think that's exactly right. Even if it's second or third time through the order, whatever it is, right? There's some things on their side too. But I agree with you, Mike. Like the math is in your favor at that point. And there's so many of those opportunities in both baseball and football. You just have to really dive into it. By the way, in football betting, this takes away game trajectory out of it entirely. But like, there are markets also that are being offered, like at, for instance, at Bookmaker, which is a sponsor of this podcast, where I'm betting on replays, whether to stand or not to stand, right? It's obviously a quirky little market, but they're making a market for stuff like that. And some of those, and they limit it, right? It's only 300 a pop and you have to keep doing it. But some of those are, look, it's getting harder and harder. Let me just say it was easier a couple years ago, because now you really don't know sometimes what's a catch, what's not a catch, what any of these rules mean. But there are so many better opportunities. Even something like that is a more sure thing than the standard pre-flop bets that we all have to fill content talking about with ad nauseum, right? So, I mean, that should tell you right there.
Yeah, I mean, NFL sides are about as, especially on game day, are about as efficient a market as there is in sports betting world.
Right.
But one other point to make is the proof is in the pudding. If one book is at 36.5 and the other book is at 38.5, somebody's wrong.
Somebody's wrong. That's right.
It happens all the time. Me and Mike are sitting at the South Point and we're looking at our phones. We're like, these lines are so incredibly, somebody is wrong.
Yeah.
The problem with that though is that if you're betting live stuff, from what I've heard, betting live stuff is, I guess, aside from props, the quickest way to get limited, especially in these New Jersey books.
Oh yeah, that's a different story.
Betting live stuff and doing it in an educated way, and it where, especially if they see you're betting something that's where they're different for the market.
Yeah, I haven't had that experience.
Yeah, that's another story.
That's a whole nother topic. You're talking about, how to count cards without looking smart, as opposed to, it's a great point, obviously. But Gil, what Gil would say, Gil, what would you say to that?
About what? About Rufus getting banned? Like, oh, I know what you're getting at. No, what Rufus is doing is in-game betting. That's a different thing. What I was referring to, which I think is what you're referring to, is people wear getting banned at William Hill as a badge of honor. Some people, like Rufus, have earned that badge of honor. Other people like to go around saying, oh, I got banned at William Hill. They don't take my bets. If you're getting bets at William Hill, you can't be that smart. I don't want to get banned at William Hill, right? So I will purposely not be an asshole so that I can still, all the calendar year, get these unbelievable betting opportunities from them. I'm not like making a killing, becoming rich off them, but I'm getting thousands at a time betting the NL Wild. Who's going to win the NL Wild Card game, right? I couldn't lose. I had the Nats and the Brewers. I set myself up for that. The Browns, I have the, you know, not make the playoffs in plus money, plus 155, over 8.5. Like, William Hill shouldn't be putting up those two props together. Someone who put those up together is stupid for having put them up, and it's my job as a bettor to exploit that. But I'm not going to go in and pound the crap out of it and then talk about how dumb they are on my show so I can get banned. Why would I want to do that? And so if people, by the way, Ed Miller feels the same way I do. Ed Miller, who plays poker, but who wrote a book on the logic of sports betting. That's not our intention, and like, if you think we're lesser for not having been banned, you don't really get what the motivation is. So that, I think that's what you're referring to, right?
Sort of down that road, but yeah, I mean, really, the bottom line, me and Mike, I think we're just trying to make the point that there are advantages, and probably Rufus is right that, you know, if you do it too smart, thankfully I mix in enough dumbness that they don't ban me just yet.
Well,
I think what Gil, what you were saying was the short game versus the long game.
Right.
Right. I mean, you want, there's more EV in having a William Hill account than there is in maybe making a bunch of money off of something in the short term, which you could.
Right.
But then losing that. And believe me, I know how valuable William Hill is. I went to I was in New Jersey last May and was betting that I wanted to see if I could bet there because, you know, I couldn't bet at William Hill in Nevada. They were taking $5,000 on golf round matchups for me on the app.
Wow!
And then 8 hours later, my account was shut down. But
yeah, well,
or limited to $10. Sorry.
You come in there with blinking neon lights, though, Rufus. I would imagine for them at this point.
No, I don't think people really recognize me.
Well, I'm just saying, figuratively speaking, I'm sure they're aware of you.
I mean, occasionally when I do wear the neon lights, they do.
Yes, okay, I know. Sometimes maybe you should.
When I'm coming from Burning Man.
Yeah. Are you still going to Burning Man?
I went for the first time this year. It was incredible.
Really? You seem like the kind of guy that would love that. What is?
By the way, I've always wanted to go to Burning Man. I've always wanted to go.
I'll put it this way. There's something for everybody there. I said my parents would have had a great time, too. You know, you can be like a druggy party person, you can be a completely sober person, you can appreciate art, appreciate music, just the spirit of whimsical playfulness that sort of embodies Burning
commerce.
Man.
There's no commerce at Burning Man.
No, it's a gift economy. It's fantastic.
Todd, there's no sports book there, Todd. You wouldn't have a good time.
I know, and it's always the first week of college football, but don't worry, I've definitely thought that through. But no, before we end, can I just ask you one other question?
Please.
Okay, the other day I wore a shirt exactly like what Rufus is wearing today,
yeah,
and you ridiculed me mercilessly that I was wearing a tablecloth from a restaurant. How come you didn't do that to Rufus?
Okay, so I'm going to answer that honestly, since we're doing an authentic show here, okay? So now let me get this from the great Deborah Song, who is a fashion stylist, okay? She taught
She's
me
an
this.
Amazing fashion stylist. Yeah. Amazing fashion stylist.
That's right. Rufus was completely dressed by her on ESPN, right? So what Deborah would say is this, and this applies to me. I'm not picking on you, Todd. What she used to say to me is, because I used to be slim, like Rufus. Rufus is a very slender young man. As we have gotten older, well, let me just say about me, as I have gotten older, I'm not as slim as I used to be, right? I used to be pretty young and pretty. But as you get bigger, you are not able to wear the same things. Everything looks great on a slim person, right? So Rufus could put on anything, and it would look great on him. That's why
not baggy clothes.
What's that?
Not baggy clothes. Baggy clothes on a slim person.
All right, right. Not good. Not good. But there's a reason why mannequins in stores are all slim, right? So basically what I was told from Deborah is that, look, she goes, if you were slim, it would look good on you, but because you're not, it kind of looks schlumpy. And so that's my answer.
That's fine.
Yeah.
So the proof is, Mike, I need you to get that shirt and walk around Gil and we'll see what he says.
Okay. That'll be the determiner.
I like this experiment.
Yeah. Anyway.
Am I the middle?
Mike is not exactly
Rufus and you?
No, Mike is definitely not what I would call a slender young man. I would call him more on the portly side.
Portly. Wow.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. Damn, shots fired.
Todd, why are you so angry this morning about everything?
Yeah, why the fuck are you so angry?
You lucked into an extra hour of pay from Veasan because crack had to go on yesterday. And you're ahead of the world.
Oh, I think I hit a nerve with Mikey. Shots fired against me. Mikey, you know I love you. Come on, Mikey. You know I love you.
He is. Todd is
so. Yeah, you love everybody you beat regularly at tennis.
There you go. That's by the way, the noted Todd Wishnev, tennis ringer. Unbelievable tennis prowess for a man of his size. All right.
Todd, we'll have to play tennis sometime.
Rufus, come on down. We make lines and everything. We do in-game.
We bet.
We do everything. It's fantastic.
That sounds amazing.
All while keeping each other alive. That's the main point. All right. Then the final question would be, and it seems kind of trivial at this point, but if you had to bet every single one of these in a bizarro world, but you were allowed one pass, one game that you want no part of whatsoever on the side, Rufus, what game would that be?
Seattle-Atlanta, which is funny because there's unlined. Not actually a line up there for that
right.
game. But I think Atlanta is a team that has stumped me. They are they look awful in terms of the metrics. They look awful according to the eye test, but they should be better based on the talent they have on that team. They have not been particularly unlucky with injuries either. They were in win now mode. They're up against the salary cap. You have guys with track records and Matt Ryan is, according to the numbers and according to many people's eye tests, still playing quite well. And yet here they are and, a train wreck, a complete disaster.
How about the defense, though? Rufus, the defense is not interested in tackling another team.
No, I think, honestly, that coaching staff needs to go. And I'm guessing they're going to go. I mean, what, next week? They have the bye after this week. I'm betting Dan Quinn is fired on Monday or Sunday night. Ooh. And I would lay a big price on that, actually.
I wish there was a market for that. I really do.
Yeah. I know a Falcons fan who actually heard that as well. So, and I bet Dan Quinn has heard that, too. That's the way these things work.
Yes.
The Falcons, I don't think Dan Quinn has... He's the defensive coordinator now. He took over play calling duties, and look how bad they've been. I mean, I think the reason... I think it's becoming apparent that the reason they were... they made the Super Bowl was they had Kyle Shanahan directing that offense. And I don't know. Who was the defensive coordinator then? I mean, they did not have a great defense, but Dan Quinn seems to lose. I mean, just like Anthony Lynn, do you remember that year? I think it was the year before they won the Super Bowl, where they just seemed to lose every game, every close game. Mm-hmm. Like they could score with 27 seconds left to take a 2-point lead, and the other team always comes down and hits that field goal every single time.
The Chargers game against Denver last year is still the seminal moment in Anthony Lynn's career to me, where they had the third and short in the plus territory. Rivers, of course, throws it into the ground. They managed to let Denver matriculate down the field.
Is it the Lynn effect or is it the Rivers effect? I feel like Rivers has never come through in big games.
Well, so that ending against Tennessee this past week, Rufus, is funny you bring this up because this has been my thing with Rivers for years now. Find me footage, and apparently Warren Sharp found one play, but I used to say, find me footage of Philip Rivers ever sneaking the football. It's as if
he hates quarterback sneaks.
It's as if it's
aversion to it.
Right. So like that last sequence against the Titans didn't have to think about that as an option for the Chargers. They're like, nope, they're going to give it to Melvin Gordon. We know that. Like they never had to worry about Rivers sneaking, and like that's a competitive disadvantage.
Oh, it's huge.
For sure. By the way, Todd, why don't you tell Rufus, since he brought up the Atlanta Falcons game, what's my nickname on the tennis court that you've given me?
Well, Rufus, we call my good friend Gil, who makes unforced error after unforced error, we call him Gilly Ice.
Which means what exactly?
It means Matty Ice is very talented. He can throw the ball all over the place, but he's going to make a big mistake in a big in a big time. He's going to make an unforced error at a big time, and that's why we love Gilly Ice, and we love giving him -2 in a three-game set, and he loses 3-0 even though he's ahead 15-40.
So he's got the strokes. He looks like he should be good, and then
Rufus,
then he hits
if you
net.
Go to the eye test, the guy looks like Ohio State. I mean, you can't stop. You got to see him in the practice. He's smashing the ball. He's got a giant serve. He's fantastic. But all the money is on the table, and it's Mr. Gilly Ice right into the net.
I know exactly what you're talking about. There was a guy on my high school tennis team who looked like he was going to be a professional in practice. Literally, he was so good, and then I would beat him 6-0 just because he just, when it counted, he was not mentally strong.
And I'm the opposite. I look like the fattest guy you've ever seen in your life who couldn't even last 2 minutes on the court, but I've got the mental fortitude of a young Mike Palm.
I'm thrilled I asked. Mikey, same question. What do you want no part of?
I choose this game because I have no read on the Cleveland team. Browns, Patriots. I don't get this team. I their talent level, they haven't performed to it. They're so inconsistent. I could see them going into New England and giving them a good game. I could see them getting beat by 35. So I don't have a read. I know New England's defense is very good. Foxborough's tough to play in, but the Browns should be a lot better than they are. So this is a pass for me, 13, tough number.
Todd, without reading the Talmud, what is your pick?
I don't even get that line. What does that mean?
Because it would take a long time.
What have I? So I've overtalked. So one show I undertalk and I get in trouble. Now I overtalk and get in trouble. Okay, that's great. I will take my game that I do not want a part of as I'm going to go with LA Chargers, Chicago Bears. When you've got Trubisky involved and you've got Anthony Lynn and you've got Mr. Religious Philip Rivers, you know, Philip, Jesus did say you could sneak the ball into the end zone. You know that. I know you're not allowed to swear and you have to have 800 kids, but you could sneak the ball in every once in a while. I will say I don't want any part of that game.
I'm going to use the same answer that I used for the team most likely to lose outright, Jets-Jacksonville, because to me that's the most volatile score for me. So I can just as easily see Jacksonville win as I can see the Jets win as I can see Jacksonville blowing them out. So for me, that's the complete stay away, Jacksonville and the Jets. Gentlemen, we've enjoyed it, or at least I've enjoyed it. Todd and Mike Palm from Circus Sports, Todd from Action and VEASAN. Mike is all over VEASAN as well. Mike, it was nice to meet your wife and your child yesterday, by the way.
You know, we were there at the Eataly with my wife's coworker friends, and the female is single. And when you left, Gil, they said, oh, what about your friend? What about your friend? Is he gay? And I said,
whoa, shots fired.
I said, no, but he's Jewish. And they said, oh.
Oh, I'm done. Is he gay? No, but he's Jewish. That's awesome.
We're so politically correct here.
We are so politically correct. And Rufus Peabody is my old friend Rufus back on the show. Thrilled to have him on. Rufus, thank you so much for doing it, man. I appreciate it.
This was so much fun, guys. We really enjoyed it.
Enjoyed having you. Hopefully we could do it again sometime soon. Say hello to your buddy Jeff at Bet the Process. For Rufus, for Mike, for, what's your name again? Todd Wishnev. Gil Alexander, thank you so much for listening. Good luck with all your bets this weekend in the NFL.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.